This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. Blueprint for managers. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to the Daily Digest with me, T. Shaoik and Sharmila Gunnison. So earlier in the hour, we commemorated the end of International Week of the Deaf, I suppose. We spoke to a team from Monash University, Malaysia, who has developed a Bahasa Isyarat Malaysia translation of the COVID-19 screening questions in an effort to ensure that this process of COVID-19 screening is not so isolating and intimidating for those from the deaf community. And now we're moving on to our second story, starting with a poll question.
Yes, so remember those Kamaiharan Hidup lessons that we had, that you had back in school? Mm-hmm. So based on those, do you think it's important for children to learn skills that let them work with their hands? For example, woodwork or needlework, crafting. And we asked you that on Twitter, and an overwhelming 93% of you said, yes, it is important for kids to learn these skills. While about 7% of you say no.
I wonder who these 7% are.
Yeah, and tell us why you think it's not important. But more importantly, tell us what sorts of skills you think are important, why they serve us well in life. You can take that poll at BFM Radio. You can also WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899.
Did you enjoy Kamaiharan Hidup in school, Sharmila?
Very much so, you know. And because it didn't feel like studying.
Of course, yeah.
And we used to do things like garden and make woodwork and sew and cook and do electronics. I don't know anyone, I think, from my generation who didn't have a huge amount of fun with those I call it patri. I've forgotten what it's called in English. Soldering.
Soldering. Yeah.
Soldering tools. The soldering tools were like such a kick to play with.
You know, and I think that your experience would reflect that of probably many generations of students who, for one, it's such a refreshing break from your academic lessons, right? And for another, you get to use these things that usually you're not soldering. You know,
and things that you don't realise are actually important things until you grow up.
Yes, I know. Yeah. So luckily, Kemahiran Hidup Bersepadu, or what's called Integrated Living Skills, is still taught in public secondary schools today for Form 1 to 3 students. And today, the subject focuses on teaching basic skills in the following areas of living skills. That's mechanics, which includes woodwork and electronics, business, home economics and agriculture. Quite similar to, I think, when you and I were in school. So in the compulsory model, they have a compulsory model and then 4 electives. So in the compulsory model, children learn the fundamental theories of various vocational skills. For instance, the tools and equipment that you need, things like how to organize your workspace safely and neatly, and also how to plan and draft your projects. Then they get to do a bit of the hands-on stuff, you know, things like creating an electronic project or doing some planting or cooking simple meals. And then for the electives, they can choose from things like technical skills, home economics, business or agricultural models, and those teach you or help you hone further skills in each of these areas.
Yeah, so this idea of learning such living skills has its roots in the home economics concept, which our parents grew up learning in school, and it was a legacy of the British colonial influence in our early education system. So in those years, the English domestic science framework was used as a foundation of the Malaysian domestic science module.
So that iteration of home economics comprised 2 main aspects, social and economic. So the social aspects focused on home and family life, and it included things like cooking, sewing, budgeting, family relationships, human development and nutritional knowledge. And then the economics aspect encompassed technical and vocational education.
Yes, and we can sort of see where that division is, right? Because there is a view that home economics entrenches very patriarchal and stereotypical gender norms. The idea that women belong in the kitchen, men in the garage. And so the skills that boys and girls learn are meant to keep them in those roles. But that said, you know, I went to an all-girls school, and I will say that unlike some of my other friends who I had heard, and I've actually still heard this from my cousins and all, where if you go to a mixed school, girls are actually divided from boys to do certain things. So I don't know if they still are, but at least I had friends who were. Whereas in an all-girls school, we got to do the whole gamut of it, whether it was woodwork or cooking.
I can't remember. Is it because school was so long ago? I feel like I did. I came from a mixed school.
Yeah.
We did everything. So that's my limited memory of it.
From what I've heard, even now, actually, different schools widely differ in terms of how they implement. Sometimes it's a lack of facilities. And so then they need to reduce the numbers of who can do what. But yeah, no, while the roots of it might have been that girls should learn how to cook, boys should learn how to do woodwork, but I certainly did all of them and I had great fun.
And I think the fact that now, let's say something like, let me go back to the home economics is one of the electives. If there are still these sort of gender norms, if kids today are still growing up with these gender norms in mind, you know, the girls, you might see more girls taking home economics.
Yeah.
And you might see more boys in the technical skills classes, you know. So again, that's what you may get when you segregate them into these very separate areas. So, you know, I was reading an article in Psych that describes how home economics subjects in the US, they had the same kind of those very patriarchal origins as well. And they were transformed in 1994 and renamed as the more gender neutral name, Family and Consumer Sciences.
Yep.
So Hinda Mandel, an associate professor in the School of Communication at the Rochester Institute of Technology in New York, she writes in this article that these courses could be required teaching in American middle schools in topics ranging from sewing to babysitting, nutrition and smart shopping, to high school electives in tailoring, interior design and prenatal development. So Hinda writes that the classes are broad and far-reaching, acting as primers in how to excel in life management skills, but she adds, within a capitalistic system.
However, Hinda believes that handcraft lessons, where students learn by doing, making, drafting, constructing, should be structured into school education in order to counter this capitalism, as these courses are grounded in sustainability, in self-reliance, in the idea of skill sharing.
Yep.
And she describes how the process of producing something by design, you know, using simple tools to transform raw materials from, you know, with logical and creative intent, is one of the most rewarding and fundamental experiences known to humankind.
And we saw a lot of people drawn to such activities during this pandemic, right? Everyone across the globe stuck in lockdowns, universally, what did everyone turn to? Baking, cooking,
crocheting,
arts and crafts, home decorating. I think we saw quite a bit of that. Gardening, of course. And a lot of it, for reasons of self-reliance and thrift, but also because you're not caught up in the rat race as such, you're stuck in traffic jam commuting to work. You can turn your hands to doing these things that perhaps you never had time to do before.
Absolutely.
You know? I had spoken to a local cancer researcher recently. I'm sure, I hope she won't mind me sharing this, but during our movement control orders, she took to making those sourdough
bread. Yeah, of course, the sourdough bread. Everyone was doing it. Well, I wasn't. I was eating it, but yeah.
Same thing. But Hinda believes that allowing children to learn handcraft goes beyond its civic application, you know, because students can learn the rules and structures of making something, and then they can break the rules and they can experiment with new ways of doing things. And so she sees this as building a strong foundation that can be useful when capitalistic societies come under strain.
So find out more about the skills and values that children gain from working with their hands. Let's turn to someone whose vocation is to help children do exactly that, occupational therapist Lee Chui Kee. Hi, Chui Kee. So from an occupational therapist's perspective, what are handcraft skills and how do you incorporate these into your work with children?
From an occupational therapy point of view, just going back in time a little bit, the origins of OT or occupational therapy actually comes from injured soldiers in World War One who were going through rehabilitation and recovery. And to keep them occupied and engaged both mentally and physically, they were taught to weave baskets. And it was observed that this actually improved morale, distracted from the situation around them, and it taught like male soldiers new skills of how to weave and create things. So I think to me, with the history of occupational therapy being so entrenched with working with your hands and gaining that sort of abilities and independence and self-reliance, that's what handcrafting means to me, being able to use your hands skillfully and engaging meaningfully in both daily and leisure activities and becoming self-sufficient. So actually with the children that we see a lot of these days, we do actually have a lot of them coming in for difficulties with their motor control or coordination or just independent life skills. And quite often this can be put down to, you know, the increased use of technology. Children are not, you know, playing with their hands so much. They're not manipulating toys. They're not running outside and climbing things and jumping up and down or riding their bikes. Mm-hmm. So what we try and do, I guess, is we try and keep things a little bit more low-tech, trying to engage them in playing with more physical toys, playing more physical games, running around and sort of building up those skills of like problem-solving and having to think for yourself rather than a video game telling you what's coming next.
So how do these skills benefit children when it comes to occupational therapy?
So quite often, you know, we can start to see a little bit more creativity. So quite often when they come in, as I said, like with video games and stuff or with technology, things are being told what's coming next. They're being told what to expect. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you kind of create an open-ended game and go, hey, we're going to play with this ball. What do you think we can do? Or we're going to make this card. It's going to be a birthday card for someone. What are your ideas? We can start to see them, you know, learn to plan a little bit more, learn to get a little bit more organized. Troubleshoot things, come up with new ideas, trial and error. So I think there's a lot of brain work going on there to try and think about, oh, what can I do with this limited item or what can I do to make this very simple thing fun and engaging for myself. So I like seeing them, you know, being able to plan and come up with new ideas.
And so apart from what you have just alluded to in terms of benefits for children who have issues with motor skills or independent living, how else do you see handcraft lessons being useful in mainstream education? You know, overall, what can children gain in terms of their cognitive and social development?
Well, I think there's, lots of lessons can be learned from like informal styles in school even. So like doing crafts or, you know, learning life skills like Aokumahiran Hidop and things like that. I think it, you know, there's a lot, I mentioned, a lot of planning, a lot of organization. And, you know, sometimes things don't go according to plan or you don't have the materials or tools that you need. So you need to, you know, problem solve and learn to be mentally flexible. And these skills are, you know, fundamental things that we use daily for everything that we do. And of course, you know, there's a lot of opportunity for creativity and expression. And all these, I think, are good, like, foundational things for building confidence and self-esteem. And especially, you know, at the end of, if at the end of it you get to produce a cool piece of, I don't know, like a cool game or a cool toy, or, you know, you're like, hey, I made this. I made this by myself. It's so confidence building. And, you know, socially as well, that confidence will encourage them to try and make that engagement with other people, try to interact. And, you know, when you're doing stuff with your hands and there's no wrong or right way to do something, you can sort of discuss with each other, hey, I'm making this, what are you making? Oh, yours looks different, what did you do? You know, you can kind of have those open-ended discussions a little bit where there's no wrong or right answers. It encourages communication. And also, they can share their methods or different knowledge or different skills, and they can find out a little bit more about each other through, you know, talking about what they're making or why they like doing certain things.
So to follow up on that point you made about how there is no right or wrong way to make something, how then do you think these lessons should be taught? How much of it should follow a template and how much of it should be freeform?
Oh, that's a good question, because I do think, you know, as I mentioned, that there's a lot of, there's no wrong or right. Mm. But I guess, you know, very often, especially with handcraft, when you're making something, there's an expected outcome, right?
Yeah.
So I think to me, so what I try and do is, with the children I work with, I try and set a structure or like a framework for how to prompt their thinking or how to, if you can't think of anything for yourself, these are the steps you can follow. But quite often I also find that when I ask them a more open-ended question about how to get to a certain point or how to create something, they have a completely left-field answer that mm-hmm. works as well.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, you can provide the structure, but maybe not insist that they follow it, because, you know, they might come up with something different that we didn't think of, or something, a new way of doing something. So I think you can lay out the structure and you can lay out a very clear goal, or you can maybe even lay out certain checkpoints that they need to get to. So if you're doing it in a structured class, for example, you can say, by the end of this class, we need to complete this much. Mm-hmm. By the end of next class, we need to complete this much, just to see kind of however they get there, maybe can be flexible, but that they need to meet certain criteria along the way.
So apart from what children are taught in school during Khmer and Hidup classes, how else can they be exposed to handcraft skills?
Well, you know, I think now there's been an increase in popularity in workshops for adults, and I think lots of those kinds of things exist for children as well. But I think a lot of great opportunities can be started at home. So I grew up with my parents kind of, you know, teaching us to do chores, and maybe it's a little bit unorthodox, but my dad was the one in our house who cooked a lot more than my mom. And, you know, I would see him sewing, like if zippers came off his trousers or whatever, he's the one sewing them, altering his own clothes. My mom, when I was leaving home, she cut up one of my dad's shirts that she didn't like anymore so that she could teach me how to mend clothes and things like that. And yeah, so I think being able to like model after your own parents or the people around you in a sort of safe environment can be quite a nice thing to do. Maybe even when you're traveling, you know, you can expose your children to what's the local craft or what's the local thing that they produce. And if you can find a workshop there to kind of learn how to do it or participate in that, that can be quite a fun way to, or a different way to try things out. And like, you know, you can even go through books and see how things are made or how things work, and then see, hey, what experiment can we try at home, or how can we do this at home to try and make things work as well.
And how important are these handcraft skills in the broader sense? You know, for instance, in terms of changing what we as a society value?
Yeah, I think it's a really nice way to appreciate different intelligences and different skills in your community. Like, not just saying, oh, you have to be, you know, someone in a commercial or corporate field to have value. So if you're good at working with your hands, if you're good at creating something, or if you're a really good homemaker, for example, that you do have a valuable role in society to play as well. And I think, you know, exposing children and adults to creating things with your own hands and or doing things for yourself is a really great way of teaching patience, because I think now we live in a society, especially the younger generation now, like the kids now, they're so used to things being instant, and whatever they want, it's like information's at their fingertips. They can just press a button and get a delivery to their house. You know, things are very instant these days. But I think teaching them to make and do things shows them that there are all these steps to create this one thing. And yeah, I think it can build that sort of appreciation, that patience, that perseverance. And as you said, like, you know, it kind of makes that item a little bit more valuable and less disposable. So I think it can teach us to not take things for granted. And as I mentioned, it teaches, you know, self-reliance. If I don't have something, hey, I can try and make it, or hey, I can try and do this for myself.
Yeah.
And I think, like, more specifically to the time that we're in now, at the start of the pandemic, you know, lots of people kind of raised their hands to say, hey, I can help make PPE, which I think is really nice, because then, you know, it gives us an opportunity to give back to our community as well. So it's an extremely valuable skill, being able to work with your hands and create for yourself.
So, Tricky, we know that you also like making and crafting things in your own free time as well. So from your personal perspective, why do you enjoy it? I mean, what do you get out of it?
Well, when I like to start projects or little crafty things, it usually starts with the question of, can I figure this out? And I mean, quite honestly, half the time the answer is no. But that's okay. Because, yeah, to me, I kind of enjoy that process of trying to figure things out and troubleshooting when I, you know, have an unexpected outcome, or if I don't have the materials or the tools, I can kind of figure out what I can do with what I have. And I do experience that sort of slow state when I start to craft things. So I could be really tired at the end of the workday, but I know if I'm halfway through a craft project, I'm quite excited to go home and do it. I think, you know, it's not that my brain switches off or anything, but it kind of goes into a different mode where I'm not thinking about other stresses or anything like that. I'm not really even that cognizant of how much time has passed. It's just about being in the moment and, you know, being productive in a way that's not stressful. And if I can come up with something that can be used by someone else or can be enjoyed by someone else, then that really delights me. So that's what I get out of it, I guess.
Thank you so much, Tricky. That was Lee Tricky, an occupational therapist who works with children, and she was sharing about what children can learn and gain from activities where they get to work with their hands. And you know, a lot of what she said ties into a quote in that psych article we mentioned earlier, written by Hinda Mandel. And Hinda wrote, "What we make, we know. And what we know influences our values, frameworks, and economies." So, you know, I take that to mean that, you know, when we know very fundamentally how something is made. You know, how fabric is woven, how buildings are held together rivet by rivet, or how bread dough rises, you know, things like that. We can, I think, when we have that kind of fundamental understanding, then we can push back against this very thoughtless buy and discard cycle. And we can value the fact that things do and should take time rather than expecting instant gratification all the time.
Oh yeah, that's a great point. And I was also thinking earlier, you know, I think part of the reason why these sorts of activities appeal to us at a time like this, mm-hmm. it also offers us a way to feel self-reliant. Yes. It offers us a way to gain some sort of control over the chaos that is life.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
And in a way, it's good that we have been quote-unquote forced to be self-reliant, because perhaps during the lockdowns, we weren't able to access some of these things. Mm. Necessity is the mother invention?
Yes.
Is that how it goes?
Yeah. And also, I mean, I guess just adulting lah, right? Yes. So on that note, actually, that's along the vein of a lot of the comments that we've been getting, and we've been getting some really nice ones. We've been asking you on Twitter, you know, remember those Kumaira and Hidob lessons in school? Do you think it's important for kids to learn skills that let them work with their hands? And 93% of you say yes, so an overwhelming number. Mm. 7% of you say no. Someone actually said, how can someone even vote no on this?
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, but some very interesting comments from Malasaya. They say, you know, yes, whether their future career is related to it or not, it doesn't matter. Mm. As long as the basic handling of tools and how it works is good enough. Nat loves to ponder says, all above plus organizational skills and basic financial management. Mm. Kyril Fadzli says, it's important, but because of how kids are graded today at school, sadly, most of these projects are done by parents and grandparents and not the kids themselves.
Okay, I'm raising my hand right here in the studio saying it's not just today. That's what happened to me in school as
well. I was always jealous of the kids whose projects looked so much better than mine, because my parents just left me to my own devices.
Which is right. You learn the right skills. I just learned to hand it off to somebody else.
A little bit of a skill himself. Arif tweeted us to say he never got KH at school. Wish I did. Mm. And then Eric Mingster said Kumaira and Hidob was my favorite subject in school. Learned how to change a light bulb and do simple electronic repair. Now I'm the handyman whenever my family needs me. Mohammed Adrian says, important to learn to clean and keep clean their own classrooms, canteens, and so on.
That's very important, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Stella Chiang says, cooking, plumbing, basic electronic skills like changing a light bulb, basic mechanical skills, changing tires for both genders. Mm. Kumaira and Hidob in today's world should not be biased. That's a really good point. Yes. And something that IK Catcher also echoes. They said, cooking is more important, but boys are never taught that. Khalis Sabri says, basic cooking, basic plumbing. But, and we have something over on WhatsApp from Sue, who says, I really enjoyed KH in school because it's one of the classes where we're not expected to just read, memorize, and regurgitate facts. Instead, we're taught to use our hands to be creative. I especially enjoyed the woodworking class because we got to create our own pencil holders, as well as learn how to create a mini electric circuit board. Yeah, I was very excited about those as well.
Yeah, the electronic stuff was great. Yeah.
Yes, and Sue said, and I think this is because she is probably a little younger than I am, Sue says, what I liked less was the fact that our school never gave us a choice in which four of the KH subspecialties we got to do. Because we were in the smarter class, we had to do business and accounting, which I thought was far less exciting than the other available options like Science Pertanian.
Yes. Yeah.
And just a final one, and I think this might actually be my favorite comment. Itzham said, ini penting, tak adalah nanti jadi kayangan loser, tukar lampu pun nak panggil orang lain.
Exactly.
Yes.
That's life skills, right?
I know. So you can continue to take our poll at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us your thoughts at 018-789-8899.
And I think, though, what I'd like to point out is if there's any improvement that could be made in the way it's delivered at school, it would be not to make it, even in Kumaira and Hidob, for me, I found it a little bit rote-based. Mm. Like Tricky said, you know, there's an expected outcome. And I felt like you were judged if your product, your finished product was not as aesthetically beautiful. I mean, of course, mine was made by my mother, so... But yeah, so you know, kids, some kids feel like they have to do that. They have to ask for help. And it shouldn't be that way. You should have some room for that creativity to come up with something completely different, but you've still learned the skills.
No, I agree. And I think that one of the things is, of course, the outcome is important to a certain extent, but these are also skills.
Yeah.
So even if you never actually, even if I never actually produced a beautiful wooden pencil box like some of my friends did, on my own, I can now still put together my own IKEA furniture, which I think is quite a useful skill. We have Rusehan, who just WhatsApped in to say, in my time, boys were ushered to do industrial arts and girls were sent to home science. So yeah, see, there are a lot of variations in how these things were implemented, depending on, I think, the school itself.
I think there is more mainstreaming now, which is a good sign. And of course, we shouldn't just rely on the education system to teach kids these skills and to normalize them. Families play a big role in whatever extra kind of activities that you can get kids to just work with hands, get them off the gadgets. I think that's a great thing.
And yeah, no, I think it's also just, it's such a break from the pace of life today. And the sense of achievement when you actually manage to make something on your own, even as an adult. I mean, even cooking for me, I haven't had time to do it for a very long time. And the pandemic was one of the times when I actually feel proud that I'm making myself a meal.
Yep. And these are valuable skills, just helping you manage time, be more organized, you know, things like that. Continue to send your thoughts in, tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. We have to leave you now, unfortunately. Do drop us a like or a message on our Facebook page, BFM The Bigger Picture. And you can listen to this podcast again and again to get more ideas on Kemahiran Hidup skills, if you like. Look it up on bfm.my/dailydigest. Or download it on our BFM app. Coming up after the 3 p.m. news on Live and Learn, Dashrin Johan will be speaking to Nisha Sabanayagam from the All Women's Action Society, as well as Richard Wee, a sports lawyer, on dealing with sexual harassment and gender-based violence in para sports. We'll leave you now with The Cooks, Mr. Maker on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.